Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Menachos Daf Samach Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we turn to the top of Daf Samach Zayin, we notice a diamond. The markings for this section of Gemara were explained toward the end of our previous shiur. In our previous shiur, we discussed miruach, the gemar malacha, the final stage before something becomes obligated in the meiser tithing. Here we discuss gilgul. Gilgul is the kneading of dough. This is the stage in the preparation of baked goods that will obligate one in hafroshes challah, in the challah tithe, dough that's separated and given to a kohen. Here, the Gemara features the kneading of hekdesh. You can see the double underline highlighting hekdesh and ovei kochavim, a Gentile. What happens if the dough is in the possession of the holy temple fund, the hekdesh fund, at the time that the dough is kneaded? So the Gemara says, Gilgul Hekdesh Poter, the kneading of the dough done under the auspices of the Beis HaMikdash is exempt from the Challah Tithe. The Snan, we have the following Tanaic source. You can see we have a frame around the next few lines. In our Gemara marking system, framed sections are of Tanaic origin. So the source we also break down into several parts. Roman numeral 1 is here, and the third line from the top, you see a Roman numeral number 2. So the beginning says, Higdisha Isasa, someone sanctified dough, Ad Shilo Gilgala, before it was needed, Upadasa, and it was redeemed from the Beis HaMikdash fund prior to its kneading. Then the kneading takes place when it's under regular ownership, mundane ownership. So it says Chayevis, therefore there will be an obligation of tithing the Challah. Misha Gilgala Upadasa, if after it's needed, he was maktish the dough after it was needed. So the kneading took place before the sanctification. So he was maktish it after it was needed, upadasa, and then he redeemed it, chayavis. That dough is also chayav, because at the time that the kneading took place, it was not in the ownership of hekdesh. Section 2. Higdisha ad shelo gilgala, the gilgala hagizbar. Person sanctified flour with water before the kneading. The kneading took place in the possession or in the rishus, in the domain of the gizbar, who's the treasurer of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, the dough at the point of kneading was under the auspices of hekdesh, the acharkach podasa, and then it was redeemed, ptura. That is exempt from the challah tithe. Shebishas chayvasa is a ptura, because at the point of obligation, namely at the point that it was needed, it was exempt because of the fact that it was not owned by commoners, but rather by the Beis HaMikdash. Here we start a long question. You'll notice that we have a long question marking. To the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a shin that's encircled with a vertical dashed line. All of the lines of Gemara that are opposite this vertical dashed line are part of the question. Before learning the Gemara inside, let's glance at one of the features of our marking system. We offer topic headings to each new sugya. In this case, under our nosei, which means topic heading, we have written in the outside margin, Gilgul Akum, the kneading done by a Gentile. HaGemar Sho'elis, the Gemara will be asking, Ha Tikotani Bebraisa, the Gilgul Akum Poteres Me'afroshes Chala. The Braisa, the Tanaic source, teaches that the kneading of the dough done by a Gentile is exempted from the Chala tithe. Haim Hu L'chule Amo, is that teaching according to all opinions? Oirak Aliba de Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Shimon, or maybe this exemption is limited to the opinions of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, De Patri Tvuas Akum Mimaisros. They happen to hold that the grains produced by a Gentile are exempt from Maisus. Mishum desavri de miruach akum poter. They happen to be of the opinion that the miruach process, the smoothing out of the pile of grains, which we discussed in our previous shiur, if done by a Gentile, that is a reason for exemption. So it may be that the source, which doesn't have a name in it that we're about to learn, might be limited to those opinions, the opinions of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, that rule exemption in the case of miruach done by a Gentile. So the question starts, boy Rava, gilgul oivei kochavim mai. What is the din of dough kneaded by a Gentile? Misnatnan, we have a Tanaic source that says, Geir shin is Geir, a person that converted to Judaism, voiselo Esau, and he had dough. Naase ad shalon is Geir Potter. If it was made prior to his becoming a convert, so the dough was prepared prior to his conversion, it's exempt from the tithing, the chalo tithing. Mishin is Geir, chayav. If the dough was made into dough after he became a convert, then it is obligated to be tithed. Suffolk, if there's a doubt, chayav, we take the strict approach and say, if in doubt, tithe anyway. That's the Tanaic source. Now this source then clearly says that if the dough was made into dough before the conversion, so it's exempt. Ha man kotonilo. This source that teaches Gilgul Akum is Potter, who teaches it. So you can see in the structure of the question, we have an Aleph over here. This is called the Aleph Odilma Bayes structure. A, it's like saying A or B. So in this case, though, the Odilma expression, which is the transition expression to the second side, appears quite a bit later in the Gemara. So if you skim down a few lines, you'll notice in the middle of a line, the expression O Dilma squiggle underline, followed by Bayes, the second side of the question. So in the meantime, we are at the first side of the question. We presented a source, and the question is, who taught this source? So do you say, Divrei HaKulhi, that this source is according to everybody? Notice, in the O Dilma section of this question, the Gemara will suggest maybe it's not according to everybody, rather only according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, but in the meantime, we're suggesting maybe it's according to everybody. V'afilu Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Yehuda, even according to those authorities, to come chayvi hosam, that hold in the case of miruach, that the miruach done by a Gentile is still obligated to have the miser tithe, patri hocha, they may exempt in the case of the chalo tithe for dough kneaded by the Gentile. Hosam hu dichtiv, in the case of the miser tithing, it says digoncha, digoncha, yiseira. The expression digoncha is in and of itself a limitation expression. Digoncha, your dogon. Dogon is grains after it's experienced the miruach stage. So the fact that this limitation is repeated twice, or extra times, have a mute achar mute. It constitutes a limitation followed by another limitation, the ein mute achar mute elo l'rabois. And such a structure, such a scriptural structure, we have a miud achar miud, it actually comes to do the opposite. It actually comes to include afilu ovei kochavim, suggesting that even Gentiles who do the miruach will be obligated. That grain that was owned and miruach was done by the Gentile owner, if a Jew acquires that grain, he has to tithe the maisers. Avol hocha, but in the case of the chala, trei zimni ariso sechem ksiv. The expression ariso sechem means your dough. It appears twice. Chad ariso sechem velo isas ovdei kochavim. One ariso sechem serves to exclude Gentile dough. V'chad ariso sechem velo isas hegdish. And the other use of the word ariso sechem, your dough, to the exclusion of hegdish, of temple fund, temple owned dough. So that's the first side, namely that when it comes to this source that said Gilgul Akum Paters, that may be, in fact, Divrei HaKol, even Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, that even though in the case of the Meiser tithe, they hold there's an obligation, that's because of the Miut HaMiut phenomenon. However, when it comes to the Chalot tithing, they may agree that there is exemption based on the Drosha from Ariso Sechem. Oy Dilma, or possibly, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Shimon Kotoni Law, the author of the unnamed source above that holds exemption for dough needed by Gentile, was authored only by Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Shimon, the Kalpatri, that they pater in the case of Miruach. Avo Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, they, on the other hand, Gamri, Rashis, may also, maybe they learn a Gezerah Shavah using the word Rashis from the case of the other tithing. We said the Meiser tithing, where you have the word Rashis there, and in the case of Chalo, and just like over there, there's a Chiyuv according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, so too in the case of Chalo, there will be a Chiyuv on the Gentile dough. The question, therefore, has been asked. If we summarize the question, the source above that indicated Gilgul Akum is Potter, is it the Divrei HaKol, or is it only according to Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon? Oma Rava. Rava answers, Yehei Rava, Yehi Rotson, it should be the will, the Echse Bechilma, that I should see the answer in a dream. Hadar Oma Rava, then Rava said, as follows, and lay down a rule. This rule that he lays down now will be challenged later in the Gemara. Before we read Rava, let's just look at the outside margin under our Nosei. Hemshech means a continuation of the above topic. Tshuvas Rava l'sheila hanal. Rava's response to the above question regarding who's the author of Gilgul Akum Potter. Deha dekatoni Gilgul Akum Poter, the kneading done by a Gentile exempts mechala, eino lechule alma, elo lefi man desavar miruach akum poter. Rava will say that the exemption source in the case of challah conforms only to the authorities that held exemption in the case of miruach. However, those who hold in the case of miruach, there is a chiyuv, miruach akum, that is, the miruach done by the Gentile results in obligation, so too, gilgul done by the akum will result in obligation. So according to Rava, we will see shortly in the Gemara, it's a very balanced issue. If you hold obligation in one case, you hold it across the boards. If you hold exemption in the case, in one case, in the case of the Maestris, you will hold that exemption down to challah as well. The Gemara, in challenging that answer, will present sources where it appears that we have sources that say that it's not balanced. In other words, it's not if you hold exemption in this, there is necessarily exemption in that. So now let's see the Gemara, where we've circled Rava, Omar Rava, Man de Omar, Miruach Ha'ivik Chavim Poter, those who hold that Miruach done by Gentiles exempts the grains from the Meiser tithing, Gilgul Ha'ivik Chavim Poter, the kneading done by the Gentile also exempts, Man de Omar, Miruach Ha'ivik Chavim Eino Poter, those that hold that the Miruach done by the Gentile does not exempt from the Meiser tithing, Gilgul Ha'ivik Chavim Eino Poter, likewise the kneading of the dough done by the Gentile does not exempt. We should take note of some of our additional markings. We've used a squiggle underline under the procedures, Miruach and Gilgul. We've used a dashed underline under the expressions Poter and Eino Poter. So that according to Rava, you can see there's a relationship. We call it Poter-Poter. That was under Rava's point 1. And Rava's point 2, we see Eino poter, Eino poter. Namely, if you hold Eino poter by Miruach of an Akum, you also Eino poter by Gilgul of an Akum. This marking system of squiggle underlining the procedure and dashed underlining the result will be continued in the next, as the Gemara continues. We have a long challenge, long kasha on Rava. You'll notice to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara a house form with a kuf in it, and a little one, and the dashed line follows that, the vertical dashed line continues down to a number 2, which continues down to the bottom of the omit, to the first word on the line where it says poter. We're going to see different geometric forms, and they're featured under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. There's a house form. They represent Kushios al Rava. And the crown shape will emphasize the expression Vaho Hai Tana, where the Gemara points out, lo and behold, here you have a Tana where you don't have this balance, but rather you'll see contrast, where you'll see Eno Poter and Poter. And that you can see even by skimming ahead in the Gemara, where you notice the first crown that appears, and you'll see the skugel underline under the process. You have Miruach, and also under Gilgul, and following Miruach you see Eino Poter, and by Gilgul you see Poter. The same thing will happen three lines from the bottom, where you see Miruach Eino Poter, and Gilgul it says Poter, so that the same individual, the same Shita that holds by Miruach Eino Poter, by Gilgul will say that the Gilgul done by the Akum does Pater. That is not like the way Rava presented things. Rava says if you hold Poter by one, you hold Poter by the other. Turning now to the Gemara, we begin the long question, as we can see it's made of two parts. So the first stage, Eisvei Rav Papa L'Rava. Ovei Kochavim Shehifrish Peter Chamor V'Chala. A Gentile that had set aside, before his conversion, he had set aside a Peter Chamor, which really means a sheep that's used to redeem the sanctity that's in the firstborn donkey. That is the halacha peter chamor. It's a firstborn donkey is forbidden to use until you set aside a sheep in its stead, and that sheep is given to a kohen. So a Gentile who had set aside a peter chamor and the challah, and the challah tithe taken from dough, modiim oso shu poter. We inform him, listen, you know, you set these things aside when you were not obligated whatsoever. You were still a Gentile. The result is, v'chaloso ne'echeles lezorim. The chala, the dough tithe, can be eaten by non-Kohanim, which is certainly not the case in a real chala tithe. That's given only to the Kohanim. But we see here that the Gilgul Akum does not create obligation. It's not obligated in being tithed. And that's by virtue of the fact you can see that the challah can be eaten by a non-Kohen. Upeter Chamor, and as far as the firstborn donkey, Gozes V'Ove Bo. It can be shorn and you can work with it, which would not be the case of a real Peter Chamor. Now, we are medayik from this, Ha Trumaso Asura. This source gives the list of exemptions, so we can assume that these are exempt. These are not the hafrosha does not chal on it. However, we can infer though ha trumaso asura, but a truma tithe that the goy may have set aside does become truma. Now, what can we observe from this source? V'ha haitana. Here you have a Tana that says that the Miruach done by the Gentile does not exempt, and that was by virtue of the fact that he said Trumaso Asura. And the Gilgal of Ekuchavim, the kneading of the dough, Poter, means it's exempt. We saw that it said Chaloso Necheles Lazarim. So that the kneading done by a Gentile actually exempts it from the need for a challah tithe. Fi'oid, Eisvei Ravino l'Rava. Ravino raises an objection to Rava. Chalas ovei kuchavim bo'aretz. The challah tithe taken off by a Gentile in the land of Israel. U'trumasoi b'chutz l'aretz. And the truma that's tithe from produce grown in chutz l'aretz. Modiyin oso shu poter. We inform them that they are exempt. Chalosa nechazazorim, and as a result of that, the challah can be eaten by non-kohanim. Utrumaso eino medamas, and that truma that he tithed from chutz l'aretz produce, that tithe does not cause dimor, that if it's mixed in, if it gets mixed up, this truma gets mixed up with other chulin, it doesn't create dimor, which is a situation where truma and chulin get mixed up and it has to be given to a kohen. Now we are medayik from here, ha trumaso ba'aretz asura umidamas, but the truma of the Gentile that's done on produce that grows in Eretz Israel, that truma is usur to zorim and midamas, and would create a problematic mixture if it got mixed in with chulin. If we glance at Rashi, we have a little star in the Rashi to help you find where this is coming from, where he speaks about it. Rashi says, "Ha trumaso baretz klomar michlal de trumaso baretz midamas." We can infer that it was only the truma of chutzlaretz that doesn't create a dimua problem when it gets mixed up with chulin. Demiruach ovei kuchavim eino poter. This is that Rashi points out that the fact that the Gentile did the miruach does not exempt it from truma tithe. Afagav the gilgulo poter mechalo. Even though the Gentile's kneading of the dough would exempt it from the chala tithe. V'kashi l'Rava, this is a problem for Rava. The Omar Man de Mechayev B'Truma, Mechayev B'Chala. Rava said that they are equal, that if you're Mechayev in one, you're Mechayev in the other. Well, here we see someone that holds that the Miruach of the Goy does not exempt, and yet the Gilgul of the Goy does exempt. The Gemara points this out in the crown marking, three lines from the bottom. V'ho hai Tana, de Omar Miruach V'Chavim Eino Poter. This Tana, which we were medayik from it, we made an inference when we spoke about Shumasa Baretz, so we see that it doesn't exempt, the fact that the Gentile did the Miruach doesn't exempt it from the Truma tithe. Gilgul Avikachav and Poter, but if the Gentile prepared the dough, and that we saw in the source as well, we saw that Chalosu Necheles Lezorim, indicating that his dough was not obligated to a challah tithe. So these are kashis on Rava. From these two sources, and we use the crown to emphasize where the Gemara comes to a point where we find this imbalance. Mainly, miruach of the goy does not exempt, but the gilgul of the goy does exempt. So the Gemara answers. This is an answer on behalf of Rava. Mi derabbanan. Now the Rashi here is critical. Rashi says, "Midrabbana klomar li'olam hodikotani legabi chala gilgul poter." The source that says that the sources that we saw just now that said that the kneading of the dough done by the Gentile actually exempts it from the chala tithe. Hanach tanoi he depatri li'el b'miruach. These are the tanoim that exempted it previously in the case of the miruach. We saw Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon would hold exemption. In other words, you don't have these sources don't really, they don't split between the Miruach and the Gilgul. The source that says that in fact that the Truma tithe is obligatory, first of all, that's only the Rabbanan. The Rashi goes on, and that which it said here by virtue of the inference that the truma would be forbidden, that's midrabbanan havi aser. It's also only aser only on a rabbinic level. Now, and why is that? So the Gemara explains at the bottom line, said that the fact that the source, though it exempts gilgul akum from hafrosha and the miruach akum, it seemed to say, is still chayav. That chiyuv on the case of miruach akum is mi derabbanan. It's a chiyuv only on a rabbinic level. Why? Gzeiro mishum bale kisin. The rabbanan instituted this obligation because of fear concerning the rich people. Rashi has two pshatim on this. The second pshat, you can see three lines from the bottom in the Rashi that says lishna chrina. Mishum is an abbreviated expression. With Lamed Aleph is Lishna Achrina. Rashi says, Mishum Bale Kisim Sheish Lem Karkos Harbe. We're talking about people that were major landholders. The Chosim Arov Maisras, and they was hard for them to part with the large amount of maestris that would have to be taken off. And as a result of that, they would transfer ownership of the fields to Gentiles, the Yamrichum of the Kochavim, and the Gentiles would do the Miruach, Umifka le Mimaiser, and thereby exempt them from Meiser. So we took one step forward and outwitted these the Bali Kisim and said, hey, you know, even if the Goy happens to own the happens to be in possession of the field and he does the Miruach, it will be Chayav. So we're by instituting this chiyuv, it's a chiyuv, and we're saying under all circumstances of miruach there will be a chiyuv that will thereby take away the motivation of the Bali Kisim to try this subterfuge of being makne their fields to goyim. Their hope was that by being makne to the goyim, it will be exempt from the maisers. We being one step ahead, we'd say it won't help. That's what the expression here, Gezero Mishon Bali Kisim, means. The Gemara at the top of Omid Beis asks a question. Ihochi. You'll notice we have a triangle here. This is explained under our Mivneh heading as a Ma'akav. The triangles that appear in the next few lines will be flipping over top down, or back and forth with the top up, the point up and the point down. Ma'akav in our note indicates an attempt to keep track of the back and forth give and take style of the Gemara. With the point up, they represent kushyos. With the point down, represents tshuvos, answers. So we ask now a question. Ihachi, if the institution of obligation of truma tithing or meiser tithing is a result of a chashash, a concern of the Bale Kisim, so afilo chala nami. So in the case of chala as well, we should make a zera that if the Gentile does the gilgul, does the kneading, it should be obligated in a chala tithe, thereby dissuading people from trying this same subterfuge of being makne their dough or their flour to goyim. The Gemara answers, in the case of challah, if you have someone that's interested in achieving exemption, there are other ways. Efshir de ofi la pochos mechameshes revoyim kemach vioid. There's another way to avoid the challah hafrosha, that's by baking a quantity less than the minimum quantity that requires hafrosha's challah. So the quantity is described here as chameshes revoyim kemach vioid. That's an amount. So that if you prepare dough less than chameshes revoyim kemach vioid, then your dough won't be obligated in the challah tithe. So the Gemara asks, well, if you're suggesting there's this other way to achieve exemption other than being makne it to the goy, trumonami efshir de ovid lei kidur ovid lo kiraboshaya. We have a little one above the last word online above the efshir. And that's because there is a number two that will follow soon. These are two suggestions of, we'll call it subterfuge or techniques in which one can achieve exemption. So without being makne it to the go, without transferring ownership to the Gentile. So if there is an alternative way to achieve exemption, then there is no real reason to say that there was a rabbinic obligation imposed. Just like we said in the case of challah, there's no rabbinic obligation imposed because there is a heter way of getting achieving exemption. The same allowed way of achieving exemption in the case of the truma tithe. So why was it said on Omid Aleph that the reason for the truma tithe being obligated by Gentile-owned fields is because of the Bale Kisim? Here the Bale Kisim have alternative ways to avoid the truma tithe. The Gemara explains inside, Trumanami, Efshir De'ovid Lo Kureboshaya. The owners of those fields could practice the teaching of Reboshaya, the Omer Reboshaya. Ma'ar Amodah Ma'atvulosu Machnisa B'moishalah. A person can... Ma'arim is an expression referring to a trick. But in this case, it simply means doing the unusual, that he could bring his tevua, his grains, into his house while the chaff is still attached to them. That's the moitz, the chaff is still attached. This way, the animal can continue eating from the grains even though no tithing is done. And it says here that it would actually be exempt from miser. So that if these Bali Kisim had fields and the fear was that they would makna it to goyim so as to circumvent the miser need, and as a result of that we obligated the case of miruach akum. Here we in fact should have said by the truma that the miruach akum is potter, because he has other ways of achieving exemption other than being makna to the goy. Inami, another method of achieving exemption would be da'ayol lo derech gagois v'derech karpifos, where he brings the grains into his house through a way other than the main gate. He brings it through the roof, or he brings it through a karpif, which is an enclosed area that's not used by people. So if he would bring the grains into his house through this, we'll call this backdoor approach, the subsequent miruach will not obligate them in the need for tithing. So the Gemara answers, Hasam befarhesya zilo be milsa. As far as the methods of achieving exemption of trumas and maestras that we just mentioned, 1 and 2, those are things that would be obvious to the public if he were to try doing it. And you would then have a situation of some type of like public behavior showing or announcing that here's someone that wants to get out of the hafrosha obligation. And that's embarrassing. So a person isn't going to do these, what we listed here as 1 and 2, these other ways of achieving exemption. So the only way to achieve exemption when it comes to the miser tithe would be by transferring ownership that's being makne it to the goy. And as a result of that, since we wanted to dissuade that, we said even if the goy becomes the owner of it and he does the miruach, it will be chayav. So that's as far as the case of the miruach. And reading that again in the Gemara, hosam befarhesya, since there the methods of achieving ptur, the Rabbi Shaya's method or ayel derech gagois, would be of public knowledge. Zila beimilsa, he'll be embarrassed to do that. Hacha, here in the case of the do chala exemption, namely preparing it in amounts less than 5 revoyim kemach viod, so hacha betzina, it's something done in private anyway. Lo zila beimilsa, it's not beneath one's dignity to prepare these lesser quantities of dough. So since in the case of the dough, there's the heter way, the easy, smooth, comfortable way of achieving exemption, so even without being makne it to the goy, therefore we say that the kneading done by the goy, we can leave it as such that it's still exempt, because he has another way anyway to achieve the exemption. This is not so when it comes to miruach, where we don't say he's got another way to achieve exemption. The only way he's got to achieve exemption, as far as we're concerned practically, is being by makne it to transferring ownership to the goy. And as a result of that, we keep one step ahead of him and say that even if you do transfer it to the goy, that will not create a tithing exemption. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a new topic heading under the heading No Say in the outside margin. And we've written in that this Mishnah will tell us about Seder Hachonas Milchas Ha'Omer Me'isaron Hasoles, the order of the preparation of the Mincha, using as our starting point the point at which you have the Isaron of Soles, as opposed to what we've learned in other Mishnahs where they had harvested 3 Sa'ah and singed the grains and got them ready for the flour making process. Here we're going to start with focusing on the grain as it's already in its isaron quantity, ready for a mincha. B'shas hakrova soimer shebo lahatir chodosh, the The next point that we're looking at is that at the time that they were makriv the Omer, the markets of Yerushalayim, Shukei Yerushalayim, Kfar Hoyu Maleim Kemach Koli, were already filled with the roasted flour. And we're talking about roasted flour of the new grains. So that when the Omer was being offered, the markets of Yerushalayim were already filled with these new, with the Chodosh. Al zeh cholkin Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda im zahayah beratz l'cham. We'll see a machlokes in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Was this something that the Rabbanan conceded to, accepted? Because there is another side to this, and that is if you allow people to be involved with the preparation of the new grains and making them into flour, along the way there may be a fear that they will eat from it. And we're talking about a period prior to the Hakrovas HaOmer, so that they haven't achieved a heter, an allowance for the new grains yet. And yet, they seem to have been processing them and filled the markets with flour from the new grains. Let's now see the Mishnah. Baal lo la isaron. He comes to the isaron, which is the amount used, the amount of flour used for the mincha itself, for the mincha sa'omer itself. Nosan shimno, he placed into the vessel before anything else is in there. He places oil, levoy nosai, and the levona spice. Yotzak ubolal hainif higish, and after the initial oil is placed in, so then the flour is placed in, and then he adds more oil to that and mixes it up. Veinif higish. Komatz v'hiktir, he takes a handful off of the isaron and burns it on the altar. Vashar nechal kohanim, and the balance is eaten by the kohanim. Mishikora v'omer, at the point the omer is offered, yoytzin umoytzin shuk Yerushalayim shumole kemach koli. They would notice immediately that after the hakrovas omer, that the markets were already filled with products from the new grains. And the Tanakhama says, Shaloi Berotzen Chachomim, Div Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's opinion that this was not proper, was not acceptable to have so much involvement with the new grains before the Omer was brought to matir them. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Berotzen Chachomim. The filling up of the marketplaces with the flour from the new grains was in accordance with the will of the authorities, of the rabbinic authorities. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading that's found a little bit lower than one would ordinarily expect it to be found. But we've written under our Nosei heading, Stiro Mipsochem Al Mishosena. We're going to be presented with a seeming contradiction between that which is taught in Maseches Psochem and that which is taught in our Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Kan Lo Gozer Shema Yochlu Min HaChodesh. Rabbi Yehuda, in our Mishnah, mentioned that the filled markets with the new grains or the new flour was berotzachem, was according to the will of the Rabbanan. So there was, according to that approach, there would be nothing to fear. There's no reason to make any gezerah. The note continues to say that Rabbi Yehuda Kan Loi Gozer Shema Yochlu Min HaChodesh. Rabbi Yehuda here does not make any gezerah. Maybe they will come to eat from the new material. And Masach Psachim, we see that Rabbi Yehuda takes the more conservative and guarded approach, as opposed to in our Mishnah, where he does not take that side, he takes the more open approach. So the Gemara now in the text asks, "V'lo gozar Rabbi Yehuda? Does Rabbi Yehuda not make a gzero dilmos of the mechalinei that he may come to eat from it? In the case of the Mishnah, that he may come to eat from the Chodosh, the Rominu. We have the following Tanaic source: Rabbi Omer, Boyken or Abosar, Chometz is checked at the night leading into the 14th day of Nisan, Uba Abosar on the 14th Nisan, Shachas Ubashas Sabiur, checking for Chometz. If he hadn't done it earlier, can take place on the 14th of Nisan in the morning, and even Bishas Sabiur. That's at the time that the burning must take place. Shasabir Rashi says it's Bishal Shishis, the sixth hour of the day. However, and the Iker is that which is not said over here. However, beyond that, then Rabbi Yehuda would say, no checking, because we're afraid you may find, and after the sixth hour of the day, there's a prohibition of eating chametz. So that Rabbi Yehuda, he takes the approach of hesitancy, whereby he does not allow someone after the sixth hour to engage in searching out for chametz, because he is fearful that one may come to eat from it. V'chachomim omrim lo yivdok. And the chachomim say that there should be no checking. Correct ourselves. Chachomim omrim lo bodak v'chulei. The chachomim have a very open or lenient approach and say that even if you didn't check up till the Shas HaBiur, you can check even into Pesach itself. Rashi says toward the bottom, he says, the Rabbanan Pligolei, the Amri lo bolak besocha moed. Second line from the bottom of Rashi, if you didn't check during the time designed for that, klomar b'moed srefoso, dainu b'sheish, yivdok li'achar hamoed besocha pesach atzmoi. You can do bedikas chametz even into Pesach itself. And he's not gozer, v'lo gazrin on dilmos the mechominai, and the Rabbanan are not gozer. They do not hesitate. At this point, then, we see a contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda in Psachim and Rabbi Yehuda over here. Rabbi Yehuda over here, in the case of the Kemach that was in the markets of Yerushalayim before the bringing of the Omer, indicating that he wasn't afraid that people would eat from the new grains prior to the bringing of the Omer. In the case of Psachim, we see that he stops the allowance of checking for chometz, or he stops that obligation. He says it cannot go beyond the sixth hour because there is a fear they may come to eat from the chometz at that point if they find it when they're doing their checking. We see new geometric forms. We see a little one in a diamond to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and the diamonds are explained in our Mivneh heading. Deos Shiboyim Liyashev Astira. These are opinions, the names of Rabbanan that are coming to resolve the seeming contradiction. We will also see a trapezoid form or a volcano shape appearing in two directions. We call this in our note on the outside margin a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the give and take nature of the Gemara. So with the trapezoid form, narrow part facing up, that's a tirutz, that's going to be an answer. And when you see this form, and you'll see on the next omen on Daf Samaches, you'll see that it takes an inverted position where the narrow part is facing down. That will represent a kushya, a difficulty. So the Gemara now, as we turn to the bottom line, Omar Rabba says, Shiny Chodosh, the issue of Chodosh is different than the issue of Chometz. With regard to the grains that are harvested in preparation of the markets of Yerushalayim, the only heter for harvesting them is through kituf, which is a process done by hand. It's a cutting of the grains by hand and not by the magel, not by the sickle. So since if he's going to be harvesting the grains prior to the bringing of the Omer, he knows he has to do it with this method called the Kituf method, which is unusual, and by that will remind him that it's Chodosh and he should not eat from it. That's what the Gemara says again on the top, Ela Aide Kituf Zohur, who he will remember. Omar Le Abaye Tenach Tzira, that's fine that have a memory device built into the harvesting act. What about these later stages where you're dealing with the grinding and the sifting of the new grains? What's there to say then? Is there not a fear he may come to eat from it? And yet we see that Rabbi Yehuda says we're not worried about it. And if you're not worried about it, of him coming to eat from it in the case of the Chodosh, why then in the case of Chometz, is Rabbi Yehuda worried he may come to eat from it? And hence he stops the checking of Chometz beyond the sixth hour of the day. So the Gemara answers, as far as this last question is concerned, Holo Kashia, this does not pose a difficulty. Tchino berechaya diyoda, harkoda agabi napo. If you'll ask that, what built-in reminder is there with regard to the grinding and the sifting. There is a built-in reminder because the tchina that will be allowed to be done prior to the bringing of the Omer is a grinding done with a hand grinder as opposed to a water wheel activated grinder. So since you have an unusual grinding method, using a hand grinder, and the harkoda is al gabi napa, it's on the flip side of the sifter. And so you have an unusual method of doing it, therefore he won't come to eat from it. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda can say there's no reason for making gzera in the case of the kemach chodosh. Well, the Gemara asks, Beis HaShlochin, the Sharik Tzira, what about an irrigation field, it's called a Beis HaShlochin, where there's an allowance made for normal harvesting? That's the Sharik Tzira, the Snan Koitzin Beis HaShlochin, Sheba Mokim, Avalo Goitzin. So, Ma'i Kola Meimar. You see here that the expression is used, Koitzin Beis HaShlochin. So that you're not supposed to make it into a godish. A godish is a pile, a large pile of grain, but the harvesting of the Beis HaShlochin can be done in a regular fashion. So how is it that that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't seem to be concerned? Ela Omar Abaye. This brings us to the second resolution of the two sources within Rabbi Yehuda. So Abaye offers his explanation and says, Chodosh bodil minei. Chodosh, the new grains, he has been separated from it basically all year. Namely, half a year, when the new grains, that which he had planted, he hasn't been eating from for quite a while, until Pesach comes. So Chodosh bodil minei, he is separated, he's separated from Chodosh. Therefore, we're not afraid of people stumbling over it. Chometz lo baldomine, but chometz is something that one eats right up to Pesach. So he's not separated from it. Therefore, we can't take a chance and allow him to do bedikas chometz after the Zman Isur has set in. Rava reacts to this whole Gemara by saying that we seem to be preoccupied with what appears to be a stira in Rabbi Yehuda. What about the Bar Plukta of Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbonan? Is it not so that in the case of the Shuke Yerushalayim, they said it was Shelo Barotzen Chachamim, and in the case of the Bedikas Chametz, they don't seem to be worried and allow Bedikas Chametz to take place even after the Shas Iser. So why is it that the focus of, let's say, contradiction is only in Rabbi Yehuda? Omar Rava. Are you suggesting that only within Rabbi Yehuda we have a stira and within the Rabbanan we don't? As far as the two stances that Rabbi Yehuda assumes, one in with regard to Chodesh and the other with regard to the Chometz, we don't have any more contradiction like we explained before. We already offered an explanation for that. The Rabbanan. Lo kashya. With regard to the Rabbanan, the seeming stira in the Rabbanan, there's also no difficulty. Hu atzmo mechazer lo v'sorfo. In the case of the Bedikas Chometz, he's searching out for Chometz. For what purpose? He's searching out the Chometz in order to burn it. So can you imagine someone who's searching out the Chometz in order to burn it, he may come to eat from it? He won't come to eat from it. That's what it says here. It's who asks him a chazer of the surfa mechal ochel minei? Would he come to eat from it? Certainly not. Therefore, I can be lenient and allow bedikas chometz to take place even after the zman iser sets in, even into Pesach itself, and I'm not concerned shema yochal imenu. But in the case of the chodosh and filling the marketplaces with the new grains before the bringing of the omer, there he's not seeking out something in order to destroy it. Therefore, there is reason for them being upset. That we saw in the Mishnah that the Shuki Yerushalayim were filled prior with the new grains prior to the bringing of the Omer. Rav Ashi is a third approach to resolve the seeming contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Ashi Amar, the Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda lo kashya. There really is no contradiction. Why is it then that by chametz he seems to be restrictive and by the chodosh he's not? Kemach koli tnan. We have a little arrow to the left-hand side of the Mora text. You can see an arrow with a Samach Zayin Amud Beis indication. This tells you to look at Samach Zayin Amud Beis, find the parallel arrow, and you'll see there where this phrase Kemach Koli comes in, found in the Mishnah. The Mishnah teaches that the markets of Yerushalayim were filled with Kemach Koli. Now, Kemach Koli is something that's not edible. Therefore, there was no reason to make a Gezerah. The Rav Ashi, Barusa Hidigmor, points out, however, that Rav Ashi's explanation is not to be relied upon. Why not? And this, by the way, is accompanied by a long rejection point, a long dechia, a little dalet to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text that's encircled. The dalet represents dechia, a rejection. We're going to be rejecting Rav Ashi's approach. Rav Ashi had said that the reason that Rabbi Yehuda can afford to be lenient with regard to the case of the Chodosh is because the Mishnah teaches that the markets were filled with kemach koli, with roasted kemach, roasted flour, and that's something that in and of itself is not edible. So there's no fear of them coming to eat before the Omer. The Gemara, though, says that that which Rav Ashi teaches, ha, the Rav Ashi barusahi, is not to be relied on. Tenach mikol ivelech, that would be a good explanation with regard to the flour after the roasting stage. Ad koli malikol meimar. What about up till that stage? Up to that stage, the grains were in their raw form are still edible. So how can we allow them to be involved with the new grains before the roasting stage? And yet, we saw in the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda was lenient and allowed it. So the question is, why? So ad koli ma'ikol ameimar v'chitema ochanami ayidei kitu v'chud rabba. You might say, well, because they already have a built-in deterrent or memory device, namely that the fields are to be harvested only through hand harvest and not through knife or sickle harvest. Well, that's fine. That's a fine explanation for certain kinds of fields. What about an irrigation field where there is an allowance of regular ktsira? Well, and if that be the case, so what about ktsira from those places? Is there no reason to fear they may come to eat from it? And you can see that Rav Ashi's hesber of since something is not edible, that's the reason for allowance, we see that that hesber does not hold up when you get to the case of the harvesting that's allowed from the base hashochet, from the irrigation fields. Elo hoder Rav Ashi barusahi. Therefore, we have to conclude that what Rav Ashi teaches is unreliable. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.